I stuck and I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, at least we got that in the first 3 seconds. Yeah. So good job, director. Yeah. So
an X is kind of.
Yeah, dice roll is a dice roll.
Interesting because, you know, like I've seen some where they do it like a five-sided die and all this other stuff. I saw one guy that he did it with like stripes and it's like, wouldn't you want maximum coverage? Like, why are there places where you don't have the thermal paste touching?
But, well, you don't want too much of it, right? Because too much is...
Well, you don't want it to like squeeze out, you know, is my understanding, but you should want the whole thing covered, right? I don't
know. Yeah. So,
this is why I'm like, it's not rocket science, but there's a surprising amount of nuance that goes in.
Sometimes, like, the simplest recipe is actually the most difficult to do because it's all about execution and not just ingredients.
Fair.
So, welcome to the Dresden Files baking class.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are we cooking today? Don't use in your baking. So.
No. No.
Well, she said eggs.
Somebody did ask me what it tasted like, and I'm like, silver, you know, like, you know, because.
Well, that's good. It tasted like gold, and you probably have the, you know, cheap one.
Well, yeah, because your tin blue like a Smurf.
Gold is electroconducting, which is bad for thermal paste, apparently. So,
but great you want it to be thermal
conducting, but not electrical conducting, because that'll cause a short. So, anyway.
The more you
riveting know. Conversation.
I know, right?
You, like, all you can't see it, but I'm nodding.
Sure. Oh, we could see it if we put a camera on, but
so can't do. Files. Sorry.
And we have a specific topic. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, to be fair, we've had a specific topic the last like four topics. It's just
shush. All right. A patron lovingly gave us a lot of money and then asked us to review or revisit The Warrior. We had talked about it briefly with all the other short stories, but it's been a while. So we'll do this request and talk about the specific short story. Everyone do the reading.
Did they
do
ask for anything specific to talk about or note anything special?
So this is the short story. It's all about Michael being retired and someone coming after him and his family. And we get to hear Michael swear for the first time canonically.
Yeah. So Andres was asking, like, did they give us more on like why they wanted to cover this story? Okay. No, yeah. I'm just curious because that's a very specific request. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's like, you don't just like wake up one day and be like, ah, yes, I would like to donate a large sum of money. Please talk about this obscure short story. You know, like,
I think The Warrior is probably one of the three or four more popular ones, right? I mean, this one. Sure. Aftermath, Backup, you know, are probably the big ones.
Day Off. It's one of my favorites. But I mean, I like them all, obviously. But
and it's got the Michael angle. It's got the, you know, the George Bailey, what would your life be like if you weren't around for Harry Dresden angle?
A lesson that he could have learned and took it more to heart, but he didn't.
he gets to bill the Lord Almighty, you know, all this fun stuff.
Right. We get to see Jake the Janitor. All this is very important. Mm-hmm. So, let's see. Do you any opening thoughts about The Warrior other than the fact that we like it?
Do we? Hot take.
Those were all the opening thoughts, I think, right? You know, where it's just like, you know, we know what the story's about. We know Michael swears, you know. We see Harry all but, like, throw himself on the body of this guy to defend him, you know, from Michael's righteous wrath, you know, and all that stuff. So,
I think it's... probably less. I mean, a lot of the short stories are not, you know, Harry fights a guy necessarily one-on-one and just dukes it out. But this one's even more so because, one, there's a mortal involved. So, you know, he can't do but so much necessarily. Mm-hmm. And two, it's all the other stuff like him solving a bunch of problems that any of them realize were problems. So even though there's no case, quote unquote, other than protect Michael, he's still kind of doing his thing.
Right.
So I think it's just an interesting spin.
And charging forward, as he should.
Yeah. It is kind of the moral of the story, right? Like, this is one of the few stories that has a moral, which is, you know, like, you are a good guy because even when you're not trying to be a good guy, you're just doing good things along the way, you know? So like that just kind of is like all of these things were like no impact to you whatsoever, but they made a big deal to a bunch of other people, you know, and he gets the very rare, if not entirely non-existent perspective that most of us lack. And like, you know, you said this one line and this is how it rippled through the rest of their life, or at least the next, you know, few days or weeks or what have you, you know, by bringing some of this up. And that's not even the point of the story either, in a way. Like, it is the point, but it isn't, right? Because the all the action is Michael and his daughter gets kidnapped and this dude wants Amarakius so that he can do good with it because, you know, Michael's not even using it, you know, type of stuff, at least from this guy's perspective or whatever. And,
okay, and like, gave it to Harry, you know, he gave it to essentially the devil to hold on to and find the right person.
Right. Right.
And it's not happened for like 3 years at this point, I think. Maybe not quite, but.
So the war takes place between Small Favor and Turncoat. So,
okay, so more like 3 months.
Yeah, okay. He's limping. He's very much hurting, but he has gotten out of the hospital at the very least and is happy in his retirement. Let's see, so it starts with Harry has received an envelope of pictures of Michael Carpenter front to his office. It's clearly a threat. And when Harry goes to talk to Michael about it, he finds him at softball practice coaching Alicia, or Leech, as she likes to be called, the softball practice. And Michael's just kind of like, well, I'm safe because the Almighty has promised I'm safe. Nothing is going to happen. I have faith. And Harry's just like, I'm just going to stick around you and make sure that nothing catches on fire.
Step one in preparing your master plan, don't poke the wizard.
Right.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, he's got to draw him out, I guess, because he wants the sword.
Yeah, yeah. It was a pretty good cat and mouse. Then they talk to Charity. Charity's much more paranoid. And
so Mama Bear. Just, but
yeah, we are safe from supernatural threats, but there are humans. And she's quick on the draw of like, no, we must be safe. And Harry says that he has Amarakius with him in case Michael takes it up, but Michael keeps saying, I'm retired. I'm not doing this anymore. And we get the first innocuous interaction with a little girl named Courtney, who almost ran into a street and got hit by a car chasing a soccer ball. And when Harry's talking to her, he asks her about a bruise on her face. And she says she fell off her bike. And then he notes that her hands are fine. And when children fall off bikes, their hands get bruised. And the mother, who is very paranoid and scared, like, who is this gigantic man talking to my little girl? And the mother then puts together that the child is being abused by the father, and that clues it in. But Harry doesn't get to know this yet.
Then why are you telling? Spoilers.
Because otherwise she's just reading the short story, man. Come on.
That's okay. She's done that before.
Do you want me to read the thing, or do you want me to?
I was gonna say she's done that before, so yeah. Maybe some of our viewers like the dulcet tones of story time from the director. Who knows? Take a poll. Put a poll in chat.
I was talking with the director before you guys showed up. Wow. Can anyone think of a short story that's like better? I don't know if it's recency bias because I just went through. I was like, this, or as the director brought up, the It's My Birthday Too. Like, I think My Birthday 2 is more fun in a way, but this one is like, it's just really damn good.
How are we classifying better? Harry's relation to the story, the story itself?
I think I would say, I went by the one I thought was like, I got the most enjoyment out of and the most, I felt like it had the most to say, kind of, but basically it's just subjective enjoyment.
Right. The Warrior is fantastic for a lot of reasons, right? I don't know that I would say it's my personal favorite, but it's like the plot is tight, in my opinion. You know, it has a moral, you know, and it has like a purpose beyond just what happens on the screen. It kind of like uses the pieces that are presented in the Dresden Files to come to a natural conclusion. Those are all things that I like. So it's a fantastic story, right? I tend to like, you know, some of the other ones better. I like Day Off better for the humor. you know, I think is a huge part of just like, you know, it's eminently quotable. Like the entire day off thing is a meme, in my opinion, right? So I just quote it all the time, you know, the whole "you would dare," you know, and just the false outrage and all of that. And then like just in general, I like backup a lot because it's clever, and it also, it kind of expands the universe in ways even beyond Harry and what he would see. And you get to see an alternate perspective of that, right? Where it's just like Harry's showing up and monologuing before he starts slinging fire and knocking people through walls and shit, and Thomas being like, "I really need to not be here anymore because he might do that to me next," you know, and type of stuff like that. Like, but yeah, the Warrior is fantastic. I don't necessarily dislike any of the short stories, but like it's My Birthday Too. Is that the one that's the one on Valentine's Day with the LARPing? See, that one I like less. Like, it's good, but like the vampire parts are the parts that I like less. But isn't like they also like talk to the cobs, right? The cobblers, or whatever.
Yeah, it's the one. There's cobblers living in the mall.
Right. I like that part because it kind of like expands the universe again and shows you like, hey, you know, these guys are still around just because we've got malls and all of this stuff. They're still making shoes in the 21st century, you know, but like the vampire stuff and whatever, that always like stays behind for me for some reason.
I mean, I even remember that story because of the ending, when, because it was Thomas's birthday and Harry got him was a Rock'em Sock'em robot thing,
right?
Because that's what he wanted when he was a kid, if he had a brother. And right, it was just a really touching moment between brothers that they're like still trying to figure out their relationship. And so that's what stood out to me most.
That's and not make touching. Up for that's lost just Harry getting himself a gift.
Well, yeah, it's a gift from the heart, right? Because like Thomas can literally buy whatever the hell he wants. Yeah. And so it's not like Harry could get him anything tangible that would mean something. So he got something that meant something for their relationship, or at least he hoped that it did, you know?
It was Harry being vulnerable to someone. He's still not used to doing that. And it was just an important moment. And so that's why it had come to mind to me. But it's been a while since we talked about the short stories. And it sounded like Andreas was threatening that we have to do a ranking episode for that. But I don't know if we have willpower for that.
Yeah, okay. I didn't say that.
There's more of those than the books, guys. So that's a much longer, drawn out fight, whether you realize it or not.
No, I think it's easy enough to. I think my least favorite, since we're now talking. I mean, I like. So as far as the Warrior goes, it's probably third or fourth favorite. I think I like Day Off and Backup more. I think it's tied probably with Harrowot. I like that one with Grendel. Mm-hmm. And as for favorite currently, though, I would say Christmas Eve and Good People as like a combo story is probably at the top for me at the moment. Mm. So that is slight recency bias, but I just like that whole thing. And as far as least favorite, I think like the one where it's Harry and Murphy against that White Court thing.
The Love Tunnel?
I really don't like that one.
Yeah, I pulled up the list because
the first one suffers from being what it was, but it's not, you know, I it's okay, I guess.
And by that first, you mean Restoration of Faith?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if we're just talking about the ones from side jobs, you know, then I'd say Warriors easily in my top three. And I mean, if we wanted to duke it out, I could figure out which, you know, like, cause I tend to like the other two for other reasons, but the Warrior, it's fantastic, right? It's not a slight on the Warrior whatsoever. I don't look forward to it, I guess. You know, it's not one of those where I'm just like, oh man, I can't wait to reread this so that I can read my favorite parts again necessarily. But that's not, you know, like I said, it's everything you should want out of a story, in my opinion. You know, like you get a decent amount of action, you know, considering it's a short story, you get to expand the world, you get outsider's perspective, it's tight, you know, just like all of it, you know, it's definitely fantastic, but.
Yeah, it is built in the same way that the case books are, but just tiny.
Right. Whereas like a lot of them aren't, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, like I don't, I like day off isn't, backup kind of is, but like, again, in reverse, you know, but like a lot of them are, or more like slice of life, you know, where it's like,
I mean,
you know,
one literally called Vignette, which was Harry trying to figure out his ad with Bob. It's like 1,000 words. If that, it's so tiny.
Right.
Yeah. I think the ones that are most formulaic as far as the story goes are probably this one, Herawat, Aftermath,
Bombshells.
Something Borrowed is pretty, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
ish. Cause it's like, you know, she attacks him, but then he's got to kind of work it out and, you know, but again, very quickly and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
that's another one I don't think I was as fond of, Something Borrowed.
Right. And like Love Hurts is kind of, you know,
yeah, Love Hurts is definitely at the bottom.
It's a strange one.
Yeah. I think Love Hurts is like, it's like a D&D scenario that got written out. You know, it's so like, you know, something's happening at the carnival, and then you find like the sub basement where they're building, you know, the potions. And then
I was going to say it's like a perfect holodeck episode. It's just, dude, we're just doing this today.
Right.
Go away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a bottle episode either way, right? You know, so
yeah. Sometimes bottle episodes can be some of the best episodes sometimes.
Yeah, like, one in the Community, one of the best episodes.
I have not seen Community, but I believe you.
And then the bottle episode is great.
There's a bottle episode in a show I'm watching right now with my friend called The Warrior. Warrior, it's just called. It's like a Western Kung Fu movie kind of. It's pretty good. Or show, and there's a bottle episode that's like, because it takes place in San Francisco, but there's one bottle episode, they're out and about, real Western style. It goes really heavy into the Western like tropes and just hams it up in such a great way. It was a like really good episode.
Nice.
Okay, yeah, side rent over.
I think most shows have at least one at some point. I mean, Breaking Bad's got a pretty famous one.
Was that Ozymandias? Right.
No, the Fly.
I mixed up the title, but yeah, that one.
Ozymandias is the ending, I think, right?
Ozymandias is just like everyone's favorite one, yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah, The Fly, that one. All right. Back to this short story, The Warrior. Let's see. When Harry stays over at the carpenter house, he gets stuck into the tiny little sewing room that is kind of the guest room where he had already recuperated before, and he notices that there's a layer of dust on everything. Because Michael has been retired and Charity is doing less of the sewing that he imagines that she was doing while trying to stay productive and stay calm, while Michael is out doing whatever dangerous things and she's terrified. And now that he's at home, she doesn't need to do that anymore. She's doing much less.
It's her coping room.
Yeah. Right. And
now she can just hit the bottle like a real parent.
She's classy. She gets the bottled wine, so not the boxed wine. Yeah,
it's still only $9.99, but she gets it in a bottle.
Right.
Right. And as Harry is thinking of them all being in danger, he can't sleep. He goes down to the kitchen, raid the fridge, and then he notices that someone is watching him and into the house, and goes out and throws a Courtney soccer ball at the blue beetle where the guy was hiding, startles him, tackles him, and tries to grab his hair, but it's too short to do anything with. And so then that's why the guy gets named Buzz for most of the rest of the story. But the guy steals the fake sword and runs. And in the morning, as he's talking to everyone after the giant like army troop out to the bus stop for school, which was so chaotic that he compared it to June 6, 1944. Michael and Charity and Molly and Harry are all talking and eating turkey sausage, which is better for everyone, as says Charity, that the real sword is safe. It was hiding in plain sight, and they can't track the amulet that had protected the guy when Harry had attacked him, because it burst onto fire, and fire is a cleansing form, and so therefore they can't use it to do anything more magic with it. But since they can track down the fake sword because Harry built it, they can use those materials. But specifically, Harry wants to stay next to Michael the whole time. And Fidelacius is still in Harry's basement with his cane sword and umbrellas and extra staff or whatever. But
it's a good place
for now. Till it gets burned down.
Oh, the next time he takes it out, you know, it goes into a war.
Right.
Or a mini war. It's not really a war if it lasted a day, I don't think.
They did kind of rend asunder an entire nation, so, you know, I feel like that counts.
Yeah, but they cheated.
Of course they cheat.
It was more like they hit a 2-meter exhaust port with a proton torpedo. But
oh, I'm saying like, that battle was like that battle against the Death Star wasn't the whole war though. It was going on before that.
No, it's a culmination.
And then it still went on after that.
They received more photos. One of Michael in a uniform shirt when he was coaching a softball team, and then another photo of a Barrett, a 50 caliber semi-auto rifle. Snipers in the Middle East use it, claiming kills at 2 kilometers, sometimes more. One of the deadliest long-range weapons in the world. And really overkill for Chicago, considering the sight lines.
Yeah, I mean...
way overkill.
Yeah, it's... they call it an anti-material rifle because you usually use it to shoot out, like, engines. So, you know, just penetration is kind of a thing. But, yeah.
What are the organs, if not just your engine for the body?
Right. I'm just saying, like, Michael and a fair dozen people behind him are in danger when that thing goes off, you know, so.
Well, he's willing to blow up a child later, so it's fine.
Yeah. And Michael points out to Harry that these Buzz is threatening Michael to make Harry afraid. And Harry thinks that's stupid until Michael points out, like, how many times do people threaten you? It's like, often. And right, what do you do to them? I mouth off at them and then I give them a whooping. It's like, yes, yeah, so you're not afraid of that. You're afraid of your friends being hurt, which is what's happening.
Right.
So.
Fool.
Yeah. So Buzz clearly knows something of how Harry behaves and how he thinks and is baiting him into behaving in certain ways. And Harry follows Michael to work, working on houses and looking at things. Yeah, pretty much. And we get the second interaction with someone that Harry helps.
Just want to clarify for legal reasons that he is licensed. So it's called a private investigator, not a stalker. If he was unlicensed, then you'd be right. So
it's advanced stalking.
Right, yes.
Licensed stalking.
Professional stalking?
Yes. Yeah.
He did have to take the 203 and the 303 before he could get licensed. So yes, advanced stalking and expert stalking.
They did a whole episode of that in the Dresden Files TV show.
Yeah.
It's a good thing nobody's ever watched that.
Yeah. Like, I have no idea what you're referring to. So, you know.
Yeah, he had to go to school.
You don't have to explain. It's fine.
Yeah, right. Like,
that wasn't the invitation.
I lack a critical amount of context and you don't need that to be expanded or offered. Thanks.
All right. Harry meets Chuck. Chuck is working on electrical things in the house that they are building, and Chuck is plastered. He's drunk and is not a good idea. Right. Yeah. So as Harry is, he's like, maybe you shouldn't do that because you might cause a fire, and I've been around a lot of burning buildings and this thing's just going to go whoosh. And the guy's like, right. What? Whoosh, man.
Whoosh.
See, really, it's just more self-preservation because Harry doesn't want to be blamed for another burning structure.
Structure.
You should listen to him because he's got a double major in private investigator and burning down buildings. So, you know.
And this one might not have been Harry's fault, but Charity would certainly start thinking, like, why do you, when you are around?
Yeah, right. Why is it always you three, you know?
Yeah, seriously. So,
oxygen, heat, and fuel is what I mean.
I was going to say, a few books from now, like, her house is almost going to get burned down with him around, so.
Right.
Yeah. She has a point.
Totally coincidental, yeah. At that time, the fire was coming at him. It wasn't going, you know, out, so.
Like, that makes it better.
But Harry breaks, he does the hex on the electrical stuff, so it's not going to work, and so Chuck isn't going to do anything. He's just going to be a little bit drunk, and then eventually he tells Michael about it. Michael says that he's having trouble at home, fighting with his wife. He's got a wife and a daughter, and he's a good man. He's just in a hard time. It's like, but perhaps next time Harry could have just told Michael instead of confronting the guy. And Harry says, that's not how I roll. And Michael's confused. Like, I heard Molly say it, so this must be cool, right?
Yeah, not just that, but now I've got to claim insurance on all the shit you've destroyed, but thanks. Thanks for helping.
Yeah, Harry needs collateral insurance just for walking down the street.
Oh, yeah. Like
he's going to come into a windfall soon, so it'll be fine. He can buy all the new equipment he wants.
That's several books away at this point, but yes.
Yeah.
And then he has to spend it all upkeeping a castle. But, all right, so
no, that's his. I'm talking about Michael's version of the windfall.
Oh, good point.
Yeah,
but Sherry's planning on spending that in college.
Right, I was going to say he's got to send 39 kids to college, so that's not exactly like everybody retires rich. So.
All those kids are going to state school. You can, it's not going to cost that much.
They're not going to private Catholic college? Well, I guess
in state even, so it'll be still a little better.
Right.
All right, Molly is also professionally tailing her father, but she gets to do it in style with the veils and being invisible and be right next to everyone. And
I mean, pretending to listen to music. Being all PI-like.
Mm-hmm. Be better if she was wearing sunglasses, too, just for the look.
She is.
See?
All right, so Molly is a perfectly good lookout and protector of her father, at the very least making sure that no one can see her, that she is around. Let's see. And Harry says something about that, like, he's going to try to stash the swords and then he's going home. But when he's going home and as protected as he possibly can be with his shield bracelet and his armored leather duster, of course, that's where Buzz is waiting for him and hits him with a 50 caliber sniper round in just a way that it didn't kill him. It dislocated his shoulder when he busted into the door as he was trying to get it open. But if it was gone a few inches one way, it would have killed him, and a few inches in another way, and it definitely would have killed him, because I think it was the overlap of the mantle and the body of the duster. I mean, kind of a little bit of double protection.
Wild.
It was extraordinarily close, right?
Mm-hmm. Very.
It was like more luck than not. Even though he prepared, right? He did a badass shield and still almost died, so he didn't actually try to not die. It's like, yeah.
Harry was as prepared as he could possibly be, but so was Buzz, and it was also luck that certainly someone was putting pressure on his side of the scales, just a little bit.
Well, he's got some karma points built up at the moment, so.
At the moment, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just wipes it out, though. He's done.
So Harry gets inside, redoes his wards, and calls Butters. And Butters shows up and says, oh my God, what the hell happened to you? I'm not a doctor. I can't help you because you're living. And they go through that whole spiel again of, like, he's perfectly fine as a doctor. There's no hospitals happening. But Harry has a dislocated shoulder, and Butters has to put that back in. And Harry broke his nose again. And keeps getting hit in his nose for the rest of the story.
Maybe you should put a, you know, mantle on that or something. Some sort of fabric.
Get a face shield. So
yeah.
Yeah. If it's good enough for basketball players. He's that tall anyway.
Yeah. The problem with helmets is it makes it real hard to lick the windows. So, you know.
No, not a helmet, just a nose guard. The rest of him can be.
Like a Bane mask.
Oh, a plague doctor mask. He would
that'd be good. Dig that. He'd definitely protect his nose.
Yeah, just get the big.
Yeah. All right. So there's a threat to call Murphy because Murphy would bring in cavalry. And Harry says no. And Murphy's going to be pissed. Whatever. We've just agreed before. But then he's like, so how does this guy know that Harry has Shiro's sword? And how much does this guy actually know of Harry, which he clearly knows a lot? And Butters points out that who knew of all of these things? And there's like Murphy, Michael, Sonia, and the church. The church is everything. So this guy's connected to the church. And so Harry goes and talks to Father Fort Hill and kind of muscles his way in to find Fort Hill in his underwear.
As you do.
Yeah. Because the guy has
this a life. That's why we knock.
And he is supposed to be telling mass that evening, and so he was preparing and putting on the vestments, and he was mid-change while that was happening. Priests bathe, we eat, we sleep. Occasionally, we even have to go to the bathroom.
You don't need to hear. Priest pooping?
Well, at least he's got underwear under that thing, so.
Magic underwear, maybe.
Maybe. Well, no, he's not Mormon.
I mean, he can't bless his own underwear. He's a priest.
He could, but that would be hilariously stupid.
Just because you don't have blessed underwear.
First of all, you don't know that.
They're chaste. They don't have holy
underwear. Aren't you Jewish? Can you have, like, Catholicly best underwear? Isn't that some sort of
faux pas? The other half is Catholic, so yes, I could.
Is it the top half or the bottom half? Like, do you have to?
Second of all, at this rate, I would probably get Muslim blessed underwear just so I have the Trinity.
Ah, yeah, true. Maybe get all three blessings on the underwear just to be safe.
Yeah. And then my underwear turns into Voltron somehow. And then I'm protected forever.
This is starting to remind me of that TikTok where it was like that guy got all of the COVID shots. He's like,
oh, yeah, I was thinking about that one too. Like where he gets superpowers or something. Yeah. I think, yeah.
You
yeah.
kids in your TikTok.
Yeah.
I saw it on YouTube Shorts because I'm a boomer.
Oh, so you're even worse.
It's not like, yeah.
I saw it eight months after it came out on the other website.
Yeah.
I don't watch TikTok. That's just where it came from. I'm just saying. So
as Harry's talking to Father Fort Hill, Fort Hill clearly knows a lot of what's going on, but he is sworn to secrecy, so he cannot tell anything. And Harry's going, like, just tell me the things I need to know to be able to do my job. And Fort Hill says, no, I'm sorry, I can't. And it's just like they kind of run at an impasse at that moment. And then Harry goes back to the park where Michael and the softball team has been, and he runs into Kelly, which is one of the basement base person. Harry has problems with this in the short story, base person in softball. And she feels like a failure because the only two times that they've lost anything in the season is because she messed up, and they're going to the finals next week. And she's really, really nervous and scared that she's going to let everyone down. But she's talking to Harry like she trusts him because Alicia trusted him because he was a friend of the Carpenter family. And he basically puts it to her that she has to make a choice of whether she's going to do nothing and quit, or if she's going to be the person that continues doing her function and her working with her team and the softball. And somehow he relates this back to Dickens and Great Expectations. And she's flabbergasted that, what you mean, my English homework had relevancy to my life? That's not fair.
Look, man, I got to get a moral from urban fantasy short story that I'm in the middle of reading. So, yeah, you can learn something from frickin' Dickens.
See, the benefit is that Butcher has read Great Expectations, so I didn't need to.
Sure. Yeah. It's not
I'm not sure that's how that goes.
Yeah.
So he's also watched Star Wars. So you don't have to, well, recent Star Wars, but the old Star Wars. Or any other pop culture reference, you don't have to. Well, you don't have it. So you have taken this mentality the entire time.
I definitely didn't let that slide because when the wife was the fiance at the time, she hadn't seen Star Wars. And I'm like, I feel like that's going to be a bare minimum for this relationship. And she's like, but I know all the quotes. And I'm like,
unacceptable.
You don't get Star Wars by memes, you know, like, yeah. You got to actually have watched it. And then guess what? We're like 10 years down the road and she's seen almost all of Star Trek from like beginning to end. It's crazy. So, you know, you get a taste.
I thought that was going to end with, but still not Star Wars.
No. Yeah. Like I said, that was one of the few things I'm like, look, I'm not asking for a lot, but you're going to watch these three movies with me because it feels weird. Not, you know, so.
You know, if she had been a little more stubborn, you could have had two sons named Han and Luke at this point. That would have been the trade-off.
I feel like she's the appropriate level of stubborn, so you know, like, without getting into more detail, but
yeah. Alrighty. Okay. So Harry goes back to Michael and Carpenter household, and Michael says, "You look awful." And yep, and he had an attempted assassination, just did all the discussion with Fort Hill. And Michael says, the church wouldn't do something like that. That's not how they operate. The church isn't making moves on Harry. And Michael has faith in the church.
Yeah, good luck with that. He clearly doesn't read the paper even at this point in time.
Hmm. Yeah, people do things. They make mistakes. And Michael's like, but this isn't the church. This is someone going rogue from the church organization. And he happens to be right, but it's... Yeah.
I mean, there's still an alarming amount of overlap. Whether or not the Pope personally called the guy and said, take the shot. Like, you know, he got most of what he needed through the church, you know, so...
I kind of hope that comes up, because if Harry doesn't get to punch the Pope at some point in the stories, I'm going to be very upset.
Like, what are we even reading for if that doesn't happen? Like,
there's no point.
I mean, there was a promise of a kaiju that might solace you a little bit.
Pope turns into a kaiju?
That would be great.
Yeah.
I'd watch it. So
yeah. Popezilla? Yeah. Give me that.
How tall is his Pope head? It's got to be like...
huge.
5 or 6 stories. I don't know. Like...
he takes it off and it's like it's just a boxing mitt and he just starts punching him with it.
If the Pope is like 300 feet tall and the Pope hat's got to be like 60, right? Like you just...
Yeah. And then Harry gets the big Jesus statue in Brazil or whatever it is to come to life to fight on his...
obviously. Like it's that or the Statue of Liberty. I mean, let's be real. But I
mean,
yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're going to fight the Pope, I figured doing the Jesus one is a little more, you know, like a slap in the face.
Well, yeah, but there's just a bigger sell on that is my only thing, right? Like, does the statue just happen to be in Chicago for renovations? Like, how does Harry get his hands on said statue? And then how does he get it all the way to, like,
Rome? Same problem with Statue of Liberty. You know? And the person that'd go with the gigantic statue of Ganesh. Well, but it's at least
in the same country, you know, in the same, like...
several thousand miles.
That Jesus statue is already T-posing, so I feel like it has power to get where it needs to.
Like Harry doesn't even, it just floats and just T-poses and shoots like lasers out of its eyes and shit.
We all float down here.
And then it comes with like the clap at the end to like, as the final move.
All right. So we're all going to hell, but continue. Yeah. You know.
All right. So as Harry's talking to Michael, Michael explains that he never really had more of a contact in this secret part of the church. Fort Hill was the contact. So he doesn't know anyone else to approach about where, how do we get information and Fort Hill's sort of secrecy.
Other than because obviously it's the story and all of this stuff, like it's weird and gross. And why is Fort Hill the contact? Like, you know, why does the church have such a secret unit and why is Fort Hill in on it in the middle of Chicago? And
well, there was a, you
know, well,
what was his name in Death Masks? The one that was Fort Hill's friend.
Right, with the Thoth tattoo and whatever, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, I mean, that's probably part of it, but I'm just,
Well, you would think that it would be a little more... church. Especially since it is the church, you have the ability that... like, yeah, there can be this, like, side clandestine shit within it, you know, that all organizations would theoretically have that potential. But, like, Michael's bouncing around all over the world anyway, and what's going to be the common denominator in a bunch of these places is going to probably be a church. So you'd think like a lot of these people would just kind of be contacts of a sort. Mm-hmm. Would be because like you're not always going to be able to get to Fort Hill somehow.
You can handle that without like there needing to be a secret sub organization, right? Because it's like, yes, the Knights rely on the fact that there are Catholic churches, a bunch of places, and that they can use them as safe houses and get food and whatever. But that doesn't mean that the priest is in on it, right?
Yeah, they like, just might be someone who's convenient of you can sleep here. Here's some sandwiches. Here's some bandages. And then on your way.
Like claim sanctuary and take advantage of the charity that way is much different than Fort Hill is the leader of a cell and only Fort Hill can talk to another cell because that's, we didn't say the cell word, but that's what's going on, right? You know, Fort Hill's allowed to know 2 people. I'm one of them and his contact is one of them. Like that's gross. And
see, actually, if this was the Michael files, you could even do it like, there's a group, but it's not even just all within the Catholic Church. Like one day he has to take safe haven in a mosque and another time in a temple. And you got like these imams and these rabbis who are in on it too with like the whole holy order, you know, like Van Helsing where they got everybody down in that basement.
Right. Well, and they sort of do some of that with the Knights too, right? Because the swords are, you know, international in a sense, you know, they're because like, doesn't he channels like Esperacius goes back to Saladin or something like that, or, you know, yeah. So, You know, and then obviously, like, crap.
Amorakius, Charlemagne.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the obvious one, but yeah, Fidlockius was Eastern, you know, and so it's like,
yeah, I don't remember, he was the king of Okinawa or whatever that Shiro was related to, type deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were related to royalty, but not necessarily Christian, you know, like royalty and stuff like that. So yeah, kind of interesting, but.
All right. In this conversation, Harry and Michael get interrupted by Kelly running over and saying, he took her. Buzz has appeared and kidnapped Alicia from the softball field.
And don't have so many kids, you can keep a better eye on them.
That's a take.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, man, it takes very little inattention for them to just wander off.
Nearly kill themselves.
So, yeah, like, that's, you blink sometimes, and I'm going to tell you that is enough sometimes. Right. So
that's why I'm sticking to zero. I just have to take care of myself.
Like, yeah, I'll tell you a story after. Remind me. So this one doesn't need to be immortalized. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, we weren't recording then.
Go away, chat.
Yeah.
Right. Molly is tasked by Michael to take the other girls home, and she protests a little bit, but Michael is very, very stern, like, you will do this, and then Harry, you're driving, we're going to Fort Hill right now. And Fort Hill had just finished saying evening mass, and they have the same impasse of, he has the sworn to secrecy, he can't break that, it's a very sacred vow. And Michael says, they've taken my daughter, they've taken Alicia. Yeah. And it's like, you don't get to keep your secrets anymore when they've taken my daughter.
Right.
I don't care what oaths you've sworn. I don't care what the church thinks needs to be kept secret. We have to find this man and find him now. And Fort Hill tries to stay calm in the face of that wrath, but he says, I will not break my oaths, Michael, not even for you. So I'm not asking you to do it for me, I'm asking you to do it for Alicia. And then there's more about the importance of all these secrets or any something, and there's a breach could put the entire order at risk, and that means more than my life or yours. And Harry says, or an innocent child's, apparently. I guess you're going to take that suffer the little children to come unto me kind of thing, literally.
Think when I was re-listening to this, having not remember that part at all, I was like, damn!
Right.
That was really a good line.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harry's
good when you can burn them on holy books.
Yeah, Harry's not necessarily a believer, but he's read. So, you know, he can talk the talk with you.
I was going to say, he's read more than most of the quote-unquote believers, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah. And that line gets through to Fort Hill, and he says, it never gets any easier, does it, trying to work out the right thing to do when you have conflicting information or conflicting oaths and responsibilities, and who is it that you're going to protect now, the person who's gone rogue and hurting a child, or the child? And
obviously the person who's gone rogue and fucker.
Yeah, apparently. But Fort Hill walks over to his wood-paneled wall, and he does that slide to the side thing, revealing a secret room that Michael had no knowledge about whatsoever.
Right. And Fort Hill's like, beep, boop, boop, and then just moves the thing. No.
Yeah, it's the Batman moment.
Yeah.
Or Father Fort Hill. The Ordo Malleus has existed in one form or another since the founding of the church. Very much like the Van Helsing. Originally, we were tasked with casting out of demons and the possessed, but as it grew, it became clear we needed to be able to counter the threats of other enemies, like people masquerading as gods, the vampires, the fairies, practitioners of witchcraft, and the Inquisition.
Right. So, quick facepalm moment. This is pulled from 40K. I just realized. I'm like, hold on, I'm Googling that name, and the top hits are like all 40K, and it's like, oh my God.
Ordo Malleus is literally from 40K. I didn't. Mm-hmm. That's
funny. Yeah. Is the Ordo Malleus too? The ones with the Coven of Witches?
I don't think so, because, yeah, that's Order of the Blackened Pot, whereas, like, this is apparently, like, a big thing to do with the Inquisition in the 40K, which is, you know, kind of a big thing, so.
I mean, we already have Kemler from Fantasy.
Right.
We already have Merlin.
Right. Yeah, I think Ordo Libis is just Dresden. So, At least that's what all the top hits are, so. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, so Fort Hill says, like, we've been supporting the Knights of the Cross and doing whatever we can to counsel and protect God's children. Let's see, blah, blah. As you pointed out earlier, Harry, we are only human. And he pulls out a picture of Buzz, who is Father Rourke Douglas, age 43, 5'11", 185, sniper for the Rangers, trained in demolitions, U.S. Army chaplain, parish priest in Guatemala, Indonesia, and Rwanda. And he's a real holy warrior, as Harry puts it. And this guy was brought in to all of this. Fort Hill's worked with Rourke on several occasions. He worked with Shiro closely a few times. He was kind of like the connection between Fort Hill to Michael sometimes. But he changed in the last few years. He became a very strong advocate for preemptive intervention, is how Fort Hill says it. And Fort Hill has a lot of sympathy for him. He says, you wouldn't say anything's mouthy if you had seen what life had been like in some of those other places, which is the same that we've heard at, like, Susan when she was doing stuff down in South America. Life is bad in a lot of places, and a lot of it because of these supernatural people, and they want to do everything they can to save people, to protect them.
So when Shiro died, Harry lives in Chicago. It's not like he lives in the greatest place.
Right?
You would think he would have a little bit more. Yeah. But then again, he only stays in the same five areas.
Harry isn't callous to this. He does understand that there's a lot of damage being happening around everywhere. And just like people get pushed too far. There's the cop that's too grizzled, like Morgan, that just can't see good anymore because everyone's too evil around him. When Shiro died, Rourke was devastated and was very unhappy with the disposition of Fetalocheus. The fact that Harry has had it since Death Masks and kept it next to his umbrellas and cane sword for years in a dingy basement, and it's not doing anything. It's not doing all the necessary work that the Knights of the Cross are for. And then just after Small Favor, Harry gets Amorakius, and that's even more disturbing. So Rourke spent the last year trying to convince the senior members of the Malleus that we had been deceived, that you were in fact an agent of enemy power who had taken the sword so they could not be used, using a vision of something that he had conjured up to lie. It's like, Harry is a wizard. He does have these abilities technically. And Rourke does know some amount of magic to be able to use an amulet to counter Harry's spells and some of the protections, and to know how dangerous Harry can be. And now he's on a crusade and he wants the sword.
Crusade.
Yeah. We're chosen for a specific reason.
I can't think of what that might be. Please elaborate.
Here, Andreas took it from you, your brain. That's what.
Yeah, he took that instead of his stupid comment from before.
All right. It's mine now.
Rude.
So Fort Hill has tried to call the guy and ask him to be patient and have faith, but he's not returning Fort Hill's calls. So this guy,
bro has got a 50 caliber sniper rifle. He is not
and
taking
hostage,
calls right now. Like, yeah, we're a little past conversation. We're a little past patience and faith. So
50 cal and some cordite strapped to a 14 or 15 year old. He's a little. He's committed.
Yeah.
Wait, how Harry puts it is, I'm pretty sure this guy believes in faith through superior firepower, which is a great line.
Yep.
Speaks to me on some level. And as far as Harry's concerned, he's off the reservation. And as Fort Hill wants not to have Rourke die, and Michael is unyielding, and he says, the son of a bitch hurt my little girl, which hits both of them in that room very hard, because they've never heard that before. Okay. And Michael's asking Harry, can he find Alicia? But they don't need to find Alicia because they the ones have the swords, and that's what Rourke wants. And so he's going to contact them, which is what happens. He calls Michael's house later and they arrange a building, a time. They're going to trade girl for swords. And Harry asks, like, why are you doing this? And the guy says, I am doing God's work. That doesn't sound too crazy or anything.
Never does.
If you're so tight with God, can you really expect me to believe that you'll be willing to murder a teenage girl? It's like, the world needs the swords, and they are more important than any one person. Well, I could never forgive myself. Yes, I will kill her. Harry says, I'm just trying to get you to see the fallacious logic you're using here. See, if I'm such a bad guy to have stolen the swords, then why would I give a damn whether you murdered some girl? It's like, you don't have to be evil to be ambitious or wrong. It's the self-awareness is just not hitting this guy as much as he's talking. So there's a building. He's supposed to go up to the roof on the east side. They go to the building on the corner of Monroe in Michigan, overlooking Millennium Park. And all of the streetlights are out except for one. And so Harry takes the duffel bag that has the swords in them and stands in that one thing, and he gets a signal that he's supposed to head up. And 20 stories up, and his cardio hasn't been working very well, I don't think. But Alicia is blindfolded with a gag in her mouth, sat in a chair, and she is bound to the chair with debt cord. And that's dangerous enough to cut through concrete when it's ignited. And so it would cut through her just as well. But Alicia and Rourke are on the other building that they had gone to using a plank to walk across. It's better than the electromagnetic thing that Harry was thinking might be a trap, but still not good. Let's see. And Rourke demands the swords and the duffel bag. And Terry says, disarm the explosives. No, that's not going to happen. Back and forth. And Harry throws the bag, and when Rourke opens it up, the smoke grenade that Michael had rigged inside went off, and there's a bunch of smoke and all sorts of crazy things. In a tussle, Harry jumped over at him, and they're fighting, and Harry gets hit in the nose again. They really are a pain to have, aren't they? Let's see.
Telling you, plague mask.
Mm-hmm. Or at least a Bane mask, you know, just protect the important stuff.
Yeah, because what Harry needs is a nose as long as he is tall. So that'll definitely...
See, he could pull it off, because... Yep. And he could make it into, like, a scythe. You know, like, he pulls off the thing and just start swinging.
It should very much be a focus or some other object of power at a minimum.
Yeah, another phallic foci.
Like, they're like, what are you going to do, shoot lasers out of your eyes? Not my eyes.
He's like, and
he just...
I was like, it's a blasting rod. Come on now. Like they take his staff and his rings and everything, and we're like, you deny the doctor his plague mask? And they're like, okay. And then it's like, psych, it's my blasting rod. So,
or Bigfoot picks him up and starts swinging him around like a, you know.
Right. Like a scythe. Well done. All right. So Harry takes Alicia down. They get back down to the truck, and she says that she's okay. And then she curls up to Molly and starts crying. Molly had done a simple tracking spell because they had time to rig everything. And so they have a compass that's pointing exactly where the guy is going with the swords. And he's running into the park, and they are trying to track him down. But this guy's faster than Harry. And so he pulls out the transmitter that he had, and he just flung it at the guy, and it got him to trip.
If only he had a gun.
Right. So Rourke grabs the hilt of Fidelacius and tries to start using it. Harry grabs Amorakius and tries to start using it. And
the batteries aren't on.
Harry was losing this fight. The guy was knew what he was doing and was hitting him hard enough that Harry couldn't try to call up his power or anything until a size 14 work boot hit Douglas into the chest and threw him back. And now Michael takes Amorakius from Harry. He gripped it mid-blade like a giant crucifix and held his aluminum bat in a guard position and limped forward. And the priest is saying, stay back, I don't want to hurt you. It's like, who says you're going to be able to? Michael is on the warpath. See, put down the sword and I'll let you go. I can't let you do that. Blah, blah, blah. You're already, everything's over already. You just don't realize it yet. And so as he tries to attack Michael, like, even half crippled as he is still a very fierce warrior. And he's bats it away, pun intended. It's slow, too slow to hit a half-blind cripple. You don't know the first thing it means to bear a sword. It means sacrifice. It means forgetting yourself and what you want. It means putting your faith in the Lord Almighty. you abandoned your duty. Douglas tries to say it's like because he retired and he gave up the sword. He gave it to Harry. It's like you, your people cry out for our help, and you would have the sword sit with this creature of witchcraft and deceit.
And oh, have you know Harry's terrible at lying
and witchcraft,
right? Yeah.
And Rourke says, you have been lied to. How could God ignore his people when they need his protection so badly? And Michael says, that's not for us to know. We are only men we see at one time in one place, but the Lord knows all. Are you stupid enough to believe that he would want you to cast aside your beliefs to impose your will upon the world? Do you think he wants you to murder decent men and abduct innocent children? Look at yourself and look what you've done in God's name. Look at the bruises on my daughter's arms and at the blood on my friend's face, and then tell me which of us has been deceived. And he hits Douglas again, and he falls senseless in the sand. And at this point, Michael is very much on an edge of his own ethics. And Harry steps in and says, you can't do this. But he hurt my little girls. Yes, but you cannot do this. You cannot be the one to do this.
Everybody knows, give me the baseball bat. I'll handle it.
This isn't even the first time.
Exactly. Like, why don't you go find a payphone or something?
Like, you are not that guy. I am that guy. So back off.
Right.
And Harry says that, like, they're done. Like, he's lost. The guy's like, we've got the swords, we've got the girl, everything's fine, and you have to stay true to your morals, as you were just saying. And so they take Rourke, and they'll say they'll bring him with us, and the church will deal with its own. And then they go back to St. Mary's. Harry sits down in the chapel balcony, having stolen Father Fort Hill's flask of scotch, and it's just that's keeping him company. Then he starts talking to no one in particular. It's like right at the end there, those guys were speaking a different language. Like, I knew all those words. I even kind of get what they say string together, but they were saying something completely different than what I'm familiar with. And then somebody appears next to him and he says, so you'd like an explanation. And this is described as an older man. He had dark skin and silver white hair, and he wore a workman's blue jumpsuit, like you often see on janitors, with a name tag read Jake. And we have seen him in small favor. He was just there when they were at Union Station before the Hobbs attacked.
And he was at the same place we are in our reading. Mm-hmm. Because I think he had a copy of the Two Towers, right?
I thought that might have been later. Yeah, right. At the hospital at the end of Small Favor. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It all comes back to Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, everything does. I don't need to read these books. I get the references everywhere else.
That's not how that works.
All right. And Harry, slightly drunk and head wounded and everything, it's like, you are the archangel. You are Uriel. And it's a yeah, maybe. Or maybe I'm just a hallucination from head trauma and alcohol.
I can't believe one of the archangels is going to sit here in a church and gaslight Harry Dresden. Like, the fucking call, right, man.
That sounds like exactly the kind of thing an archangel would do. Especially this one.
Yeah. Harry offers him some of the scotch and he drinks it. That's very kind of you to share. Don't exactly make a habit to do this, but you've got some questions and you can ask them. It's like, why did you guys let Michael get so screwed over? So we didn't let him do anything. And he starts putting it down that of like, Michael chose to be the knight. He chose to put himself into danger. He got into a very, very dangerous situation on the island. Somebody chose to point a gun at him and pull the trigger. And Harry chose to put him in the harness first that allowed Michael to live. All of those choices happen, and Uriel didn't explicitly do anything about it. But so in other words, Harry says, the God was doing nothing to help. It's like, that's not the same thing. But God isn't about making good things happen to you. He's about you making the choices, not gift wrapping good things for you and putting it on a pedestal for you. It's all about free will. And Jake/Uriel says, you saw the Valkyrie staring at Michael. You thought he was in danger. So even though it was your turn, you chose, and that mattered. But that's where he got hurt. It's like, if he hadn't had that exact situation set up for him, he would have died on that island. And now he is retired. Yeah. He's retired with his family.
He says, pretty much the only the way that pretty much the only way that he's going to get retired and be able to spend with his family. Like, knights don't tend to just get to walk away, you know?
No. So very unusual. I won't bore you with the details, but suffice to say that your choice in that moment changed everything. And then Harry says, but you lost a knight. You lost a warrior. It's like, yeah, but did we? He can barely walk, but now he can't fight like a Denarian because he's hurt. It's like, you mean the warrior in the literal sense of only thinking of the combat, but this battle that Uriel Jake is waging is on every level. It's not just the big bad monsters. It's also about those little things that Harry and Michael affect, like Courtney, like Kelly, and like Chuck. So Michael and I are literal guys, so this is hard for him to understand. And so Uriel now tells him that, like, now Courtney, now her mother is aware of the abuse, and she moved out the next day. And so now they are saved, and that the cycle of abuse that's been going on for almost 300 years is broken because Harry had a small observation of how the girl got a bruise. And Chuck the electrician, he was drunk, and in 2 months from now, their four-year-old daughter's going to be diagnosed with cancer and require a marrow transplant. And Chuck is the only one who's a viable donor. And because Chuck is alive and safe, they will be healthy and happy, happier than they've ever been. And then Kelly just needed a nice person for a moment. That's what Harry was. And these small tasks are the good that you do when the people that you're around. Yeah. But last but not least, let's not forget Michael. He's a good man, but where his children are involved, he can be completely irrational. He was a hairbreadth from losing control. And your words, your presence, your will helped him choose mercy over vengeance. And Harry said, I didn't mean to do any of that. It was all an accident. Yes, but you still chose those actions. You still did that. And now Michael is happier. He's getting to build houses for people. He's doing the compassionate thing he's always wanted to do. He is a carpenter in name and occupation. And then Harry says, let's talk about my bill. You got me involved in this. Just like any of my clients, where do I send the bill to?
Vatican City.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, you're trying to bill the Lord of God Almighty? It's like, heck no, but I'm billing you. Cough up or else I'm not doing anything more. Otherwise, maybe next time I'll just stand around whistling while you want me to help out. And Jake smiles and says, no, you won't. And then he disappears. But this is the favor that Harry uses in changes to say, you owe me. Now come help me. Sort of.
Hmm. Gotcha. Okay. I was thinking, I mean, it's like he does get a few million dollars later, and who's to say that Uriel didn't tip the scales of fate in that case, but you know.
Anna Velmont. Right. That was already kind of involved. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure God, Uriel, and or the Vatican all could have afforded a couple hundred dollars.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and that's all Harry wanted, you know, but yeah, like it's just kind of funny because it's such a small moment for Harry in the sense that it's like, bro, like he's the Archangel of Light. Like your world continues to exist. You're welcome. That's your payment. Like, you know, like he's over here fighting for the good guys. Everything he does is like, you know, payment, you know, so it's
at the same time, if my world continued to exist and I could pay the rent, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. Right? Paying rent is a generally a good thing.
Certainly a better argument would have been like, you know, hey, I'm starving and need to pay my bills so I can continue fighting the good fight. You know, like think of it more of as a requisition than it is, you know, payment, but you know, like, still some small moment, but
at least cheeky. Cover the expenses.
Right.
Maybe if he could pay his bills, he'd actually go to a hospital.
Not always, because people like Buzz would be waiting for him there. So
I was gonna say he gets shot a lot, you know, that raises questions.
Yeah, not so there's all of that, but then there's also the added compoundment of, you know, his just natural hex, mm-hmm. you know, so
yeah.
Places where he needs to get treated for gunshot wounds also tend to have other very important electronic equipment that.
And then there's people asking, how exactly did you get shot? Like, do we need to investigate this? How many times has this happened to you? What are you doing in your life?
Yeah, what do you mean this isn't the first time you've been shot? What do you mean today?
What he needs to do is go to a place that has healing crystals. Not even real ones, because I'm sure those exist somewhere in the magical world, but like just some woo-woo, you know, crystal healer. That'll be fine.
I'm sure Elaine knows somebody. She was already trying to do the Reiki stuff.
Yeah, but hers worked.
I mean, it does stand to reason that it's like you've got listens to wind with like multiple degrees, like doctorates, MDs, all that stuff. He can use water magic to help heal, apparently. Like, you would just have wizardy hospitals, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's probably just Harry being an idiot that he's never looked into this and be like, yeah. There's got to be a field hospital in North America somewhere.
There's got to be a traveling nurse medic person.
Well, I was going to say, even like, for all of Listens to Wind stuff, like, a lot of it is probably... Like he says, he goes back to school and stuff. I can't imagine, even with all his control, he's stepping into an MRI room.
No. Yeah, for sure not. But I'm just saying, like, he knows the physical science behind it as well as he's, like, between him and Ancient Mai, for example, who's an artificer, like, build some magical crystal contraption that helps knit wounds, you know. So it's like, yes, we took advantage of a wizard's natural healing and we ramped it up even faster, you know, like, so.
Or yeah, just build mech bodies so that you could be a head in a jar and walk around.
Okay, well, that's what you want to do.
If his head is in a jar, it's much harder to break his nose.
Time is a river, the head is a jar. Yeah, I get it. It's very zen. Exactly. So
just take the Demon Reach crystals. Ancient Mike can make the suit out of that.
Yeah, he can probably rig up some form of like crystal bed thing that heals you when you sleep or something. If he just did it with enough brains on the island, or something, I'm sure he could do this. If he had smart enough to ask questions.
Say, I wouldn't put that bed on the island because then you're getting like the healing dark powers.
Well, it's right. Like that's Alfred. Like, Alfred is smart enough to like, here's where you are broken and how you just stay alive, as Alfred already has done.
Sure, but then you don't really need the bed.
You just need to be on the island.
Use with Alfred for a little bit again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was kind of gross and owie, and you know, it wasn't exactly a good thing. But
he was dead. What did he care?
Hard life of a geosexual.
Yeah, it also very much like required Mab's involvement and took a lot out of her. So, but the next warrior,
time. We did it. Yay.
It's a good short story. It was fun to revisit. Yeah, it's need to do more rereads.
Yeah,
it's been like 3 years.
Hopefully next year, you know. So. Right. We're at least getting another Jim Butcher book. So
hurry. Yeah, but it'll release in like February and then we'll have nothing else for the rest of the year again.
That's just our life. I mean, literally, we've had, what, 3 books come out? I mean, not like accepting short stories and, you know, all the Bigfoot stuff and whatever. We've had like
three. I think it's books, 4, right? Cold Days, didn't we?
Did we?
No, we started after Skin Game. Skin Game had already
after
been out.
After Skin Game.
After Skin Game, yeah. So, no, we had nothing for 6 years.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So we're fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's totally.
It's fine.
We just go like, back to casting. We'll go back to ranking. I mean, we'll do this again.
The benefit is like he involves all of this stuff. So next time we, you know, we could do a deep dive on the 40K Ordo Malice and, you know, like,
oh, all that is not all doing you research for that one. Yeah.
That is all you.
Just go read a couple of wiki pages.
No, can't.
I can't. Mm-mm. Not 40K. It's just.
I don't even know how to read. Much.
All right. Well,
we'll he was doing the plug time today because Andreas abandoned us before we could get him to get us money.
Right. Well, so, this is what happens if you give us money. You can give us a topic and we might do it. Like, no promises, but we'll certainly think about it and consider it. So
we should put an amount, though, as right now we have a bar, and that bar is a little high.
The bar was a little high. So, I mean, I would especially say anyone that's in our inner tier plus the $12 a month, like that, which is like, that's definitely, you can have much more of a say. If it's $2 and you want us to talk about something gross, meh. But
why does it got to be something gross?
Well,
Because it's an easy no at that point, and, except for a couple of you guys are into some of that
you
stuff.
You want to assume the worst in our Patreons.
I was assuming it, but I don't.
Like, oh, yeah. Well, I can come up with the topics patrons. For free at that point.
I am too online, and I know what people will pay for on the internet, and the people will request for it. Just like, no, thank you.
That's true. You are.
Well, thanks for taking me down a path I didn't need today. So.
So,
which day did you need it? Because then we'll just go down that path that day.
The 31st of March. So,
fuck it. It's going to happen now.
Yeah.
All right. Make it work. Next week, are we continuing with Lord of the Rings and reading?
Yeah, the first book of Return of the King, theoretically. I've started it. I'm not super far into it, but I guess I better get a move on. So
yeah, I have not started.
Once again, impressed about how accurate the movie is compared to it. And yet I feel like Return of the King deviates a lot more than even, you know, the Two Towers did though. So I'm going to have to keep writing it, but like,
well, you've got the whole part of the book at the end. That's not going to be there.
Well, for sure. But like the Denethor part where I was like, I was always kind of annoyed because the way that I felt like they described the cleaving of the horn just didn't make sense the way it was portrayed in the movie, but it's absolutely how it's portrayed in the book. It's just like, he's got two halves of a horn that was cleaved down the middle. And I'm like, how did he survive that? But okay. You know, like, cause it's like, if you're blowing a horn and somebody cleaves it right down the fucking middle, like your face on the end of it. So
the implication I remember from how Faramir was talking about is like the fact that the horn is broken is a magical thing that it shows that Boromir has died, that, right. It wasn't a blow that broke it. It was the spell is broken.
Okay, sure. It was something for a long time I had a problem with from the movie and whatever. And it's like a minor detail, so it's not like a big deal. But in the book, it's like it's verbatim. Like it is absolutely spelled out very much what's going on. I find it an odd deviation that the movies went with like the Mission Impossible sequence for the Beacons of Gondor now, because it's a total non-issue in the book, where it's just like, hey, guess what? The book is like 4 or 5 minutes into it and the beacons are lit. How cool is that? Gondor calls for aid and we're going to go and shit. And then like, maybe they deal with it later when you see the Rohirrim side of it and whatever, but you definitely don't have the, I almost died lighting myself on fire so that I could do all of this stuff. And Gandalf is a whole lot less of an asshole in the book than he was in the movie, where like, you know, he gets cheesed off that, you know, it's Pippin, right? That Pippin is like, swears his fealty. And it's like, I fucking told you to keep your mouth shut. Why don't you listen to me? And in the book, he's like, why would I be mad about that? You did a good thing. You know? So I'm like, that's a big flop. You know, it's
you need
like,
to have tension somewhere.
I was going
to
say, in the movie, Pippin's already got him killed, so he's got a reason.
Right. It's all downhill from there, right? He's like, yeah, no. I mean, it's just funny because, yeah, like, I actually like movie Gandalf. It's just quite a deviation from, you know, like, you get a lot more cheeky Gandalf in the books, where he's like, I'm a badass wizard, and I'm playing all of you.
I know
and
you I, don't.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so whereas like he plays a part in a couple of times, but he's absolutely like more mirthful and, you know, playful and stuff. So I don't know. Anyway, that's where I'm at so far. But yeah, got to read more for sure.
Yeah, we'll see if everyone else can do the homework on time for next week. We'll see. Andreas bears to show his face again.
Right. He knows it through memes. It's fine. So
yeah, he doesn't need to. We know the lines anyway. Who's seen the movie?
Yeah, it's great.